Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the EFES Podcast. If you like what you're hearing, be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, episode 26 of the EFES Nation Podcast. Thanks for everybody joining us today, tomorrow, whenever it is that you're logging in, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on the Apple, whatever platform you're checking us out on. We've got a very special guest. We failed miserably at promoting this ahead of time, and that's okay, because we're excited about the guest that we have today. Had the chance to get to know him over the last couple of years, and just somebody that a lot of you, if you're listening in and you're not with EFES, you're with EFES, you definitely probably know this gentleman. Excited to have Justin Brock on with us today. Justin, appreciate you spending some time with us, man.
Absolutely, man. Wouldn't be anywhere else. You said that I could come on here, and so that's where I want to be.
Yeah, and the humble approach is awesome, because I know my partner in crime, Holden Hassel, is on with us as well. I'd always try to rope him into this, but the humble approach, I marvel at, because you probably are getting pulled in about a million different directions. Not to make you blush by any means or embarrass you, but I always kind of think of a few different areas that you have always shined in, where it's like, whether it's social media, whatever, but industry savant is something that comes to mind. Somebody that's always willing to pour into others, but also entrepreneur, not just from the agency and IMO that you're running and building and growing, but also outside of that with Medicare Con. I've been myself, love it. I think Holden made a point, we're not missing next year. We're going to go to both Medicare Con and Medicarians, but our buddies in the business, we tell them all about Medicare Con, so we enjoyed that. But the maestro of Medicare Con also pours into others throughout social media without anything asking in return. You're not you don't tell people, hey, I'll give you this info if you come and join my agency, which I've always appreciated. I'll give a humble shout out to my boy Jason Matura, who thinks the world of you as well. He goes to pretty much anything and everything that you and Justin put on. And there's a reason that you have such a great following. Some of the quotes that you've thrown out over the years, I've always enjoyed. You lack priorities, not information. I always love that one. Those snippets always kind of ring true. Also, to me personally, ring true. Like, get it together, dude. But one of the things that came up recently, and we'll just attack the here and the now. A lot of people were kind of chicken littling when the new CMS rule came out. Social media, everybody was putting a video out. Holden and I were trying to decipher the 1,200 plus pages. And what I shared with him, and he saw it as well, was your video where you're casually sitting, maybe on your back part of the property. I don't remember where it was exactly. But you're just calm demeanor of, hey, it's going to be okay, which goes to the quote that you threw out soon after, which is, the bigger the disruption, the bigger the opportunity. And I was kind of gave Holden and I confidence as we sat and we're reading, hey, look, there's no reason to freak out. So anyway, without rambling too much, that got me fired up. And I want to kind of start today with, for somebody that's been as successful as you have in your organization, it's just blossoming and it's continuing to grow. We'll jump into kind of that message of just not a knee-jerk reaction to change in our industry. How did you guys handle that? Because I know you didn't get a chance to read the whole thing, but at the time you didn't. You're better understanding now. Where are we headed? Like, what was everybody was knee-jerk reaction? What's your thoughts on where we are in the Medicare space?
Well, I am very happy that there are a lot of people in the industry that read everything, and so I can get the cliff notes. and I've surrounded myself with people and relationships that will do that. And so early on, you know, as soon as things come out, you know, I reach out to those people and try to get the highlights. And of course, I'll go in and try to read certain parts of it, you know, to get an understanding. But you know, ahead of time, we already knew that compensation was under fire before any of that came out. If you watch the Senate Finance Committee hearings, you knew they were talking about it. And even back then, I kind of maintained that there's a positive and a negative to any interpretation or path forward. You know, you think about so first we have to acknowledge that the Medicare industry is flawed right now. You know, and I don't necessarily think that it's how much is paid per application. but the rapidness at which it increased created this issue with people who I don't think are, whether they're good marketers or bad or not good marketers, does it really matter? I think that they were asked to scale too quickly. And so like, I have a little bit of a problem with the volume-based enrollment language. Is volume-based enrollment the same as being tied to individual applications with administrative overrides? I don't really think so. So I don't know how that'll all pan out. I know there's been some lawsuits filed and other things. So we'll see how it goes. But volume-based is where I think the big problems came in. And the examples are, if you know, Humana or whoever goes to eHealth or whoever and says, here's $30 million this year. We gave you 10 last year. Now we need three times as many applications. Is that company capable of submitting that many applications? Clearly, yes. I think they did it. You know, and whether it's Humana, yeah, I probably should say TNT Insurance versus whatever. But like, the deal is they did hit it, but were they quality? Of course not. There's a rapidness at which I can scale. So like in distribution scaling, I can scale distribution by acquiring existing distribution. So like if I said, okay, this year we did 50,000 Humana apps and next year I want to do 100,000. Well, I can go and find other groups that are already doing quality business and acquire double my production. But if I took actual LOA producers, which I have, we have a team of about 21 LOAs as a big part of our business, and internally salaried employees. And somebody came to me and said, okay, last year you did, you know, 5,000 Medicare Advantage plans and 1,000 med subs in that W-2 office. We need you to triple that next year. Would the quality go down? Yes. How much would it go down? The faster you scale it, you know, in that type of operation, the more it goes down. So I guess the reason I'm bringing that up is like you definitely had this issue with quality, you know, where it was going down. It did lead to more complaints. I do believe a lot of the complaints became a conditioning deal, where I think a lot of times now it's the same people complaining over and over and over again every time they make a decision. But also when you had outbound phone calls from Pakistan being a leading driver in new applications, you're going to have these people calling the same opt-in data over and over again. And then they're talking to people that I don't even believe are lucid. And so then they're changing the same people over and over again. And this is I'm not necessarily against inbound phone calls. You know, I love inbound phone calls, but how are they generated? What's the source of it? What's the quality of it? What's the desire of that person to really talk? I got these calls a couple of years ago when it was really bad. And so I got them and I'd get transferred. I would try to pretend like I was a Medicare beneficiary. I've said this before. I'd get transferred for three different fronters. You get the guy that calls you, then he sends you to this other guy, and then he sends you to another guy. And maybe I've talked to two to three Middle Eastern guys named Frank, Paul, and John. And then finally I get back to a SelectQuote or a GoHealth agent on the other side. And we wondered why the lifetime value plummeted, and we wondered why all that. So I actually think if the government stayed out of it, it's self-correct because the LTVs were already plummeting. Assurance IQ got out of the business, not because of CMS compliance. I'm not sure that helped things, but they believe their CPA was getting greater than the LTV or too close to the LTV, and it just didn't seem like a good bucket to put money in anymore. So free market will adjust, you know, as that stuff happens. You just have to give it time. And also we've had 3 years in a row of like compliance, and when they're not even really giving time for last year's compliance to check up. Cause I know for a fact that, you know, yes, there are still live transfers that are crappy happening, but they have gone down a lot. Yes, there are still some shitty commercials that are like very baity and annoying, but there are definitely less commercials now than there were 2 years ago. So we do know that the compliance is working to some degree. And probably enforcing what's already in place a little bit more would have been more relevant than this compensation change. But if any of these things that push these people out of the business, and that would be the nail in the coffin to the shittiest versions of the business that still exist, is the marketing money going away, like the big chunks of marketing money. So if that really was the interpretation, cost per acquisition go down, lifetime value would go up for the people that stuck around and figured out how to do it right. So I'd say you'd have like a 12-month, you know, kind of falling off, followed by a bigger rebound and more opportunity for the people that doubled down. Kind of compare it to real estate market collapses in 07, 08, 09. Real estate agents, you know, tons of them get out of the business, but the ones that stuck around, you know, ended up being having these huge brokerages, not because they were better than everybody else, but because by the time the market started to rebound a couple of years later, they were the ones still there that had existing names and reputations in the business, and all of their competition went away. Same thing happened with ACA. Obamacare signed into law, and I know agencies that shut down, just shut down, like they were going to go into a different industry. One guy in Tupelo said it was the end of health insurance, and he sold Medicare too. He gets out, starts opening coffee shops, and now I'm like, dude, you know, I ended up buying his phone number from that office and forwarding it to our office. And, you know, yeah, there's a correction period, you know, and it, that one might have lasted a couple of years. But now, of course, plenty of people made tons of money in ACA. Now it's kind of gotten bad again. And it's funny because the government doesn't even acknowledge that that market has problems, which it has way more than Medicare Advantage does.
Yeah. It's like the Wild West. They're kind of, you know, 10 years ago, they're the Medicare Advantage 10 years ago. And there's not much oversight at all, to your point.
Right. Yeah. And that, and then on the reverse side of Medicare Advantage, if things get as close to as normal as possible and going forward, then of course I'm not mad about it because we've been growing anyway. So I think it's basically, you're looking at a growth curve of continuing to grow like we have been, just steady and gradual and great. If you grow gradually, you know, aggressively gradual, I guess, comes to mind, because, yeah, I don't want to sit around and like only grow at 10%. The market's growing naturally at 10%. But if I'm growing at, you know, 25, 30, 35% year over year, that's solid. These guys that are trying to go 200, 300, that was the ones that was messing the market up. But if there was a complete, you know, overly aggressive interpretation of it, I'd see like the worst case scenario being that the people that stick around are going to take a hit for a little bit, but then they're going to come out of it bigger than ever. Because think about all the people that'll get out of it. They'll just get out of it. And then if we stick around, we get to absorb all of their books. Exactly. I was talking to somebody about it this morning, who's a good friend of mine, and, you know, very aggressive builder. And he basically said, if they take the really aggressive approach and put the nail in the coffin of some of these big groups that have to pivot away from some of that, that he's going to take out loans to scale faster during that time. You know, so
it's smart. I love it. Alden, I know you got something. Go ahead.
Yeah, definitely. So I love everything you just said here. And one big thing that we're learning as well every single year with the CMS not so final rule, as I like to call it, because it changes every dang year. It's final for 1 year. Not a single thing is permanent, right?
Right.
It's always changing. There's an ever-changing dynamic to the business. So my question would be to you, it's twofold, because there's two different ways that we're looking at it. Because whenever we're building a business as upline managers, FMOs, we look at it from a very macro perspective, right? Where's the overall trend of the business? Where do we think it's today? And where do we think it's going tomorrow? And what point in time do you want to make an exit, or like you, do a phenomenal deal where now you have the benefit of a massive, even larger organization, right, in the Medicare space, doing business with you to help you grow even more with more resources. But if you weren't at your size, you're getting into the business today, 2024, what would you do to build a business as an agent to acquire a book of business rapidly, but at a healthy growth rate to the point where it's quality business with a high persistency? And then how would you then translate that same knowledge to say, hey, how am I going to build an agency as well? Because those are two different people. You know this just as much as I do. We get agents all the time that come in. They have no desire to build a business or an agency, okay? They have a desire to build strictly a book of business for themselves. I don't want the headache of management. I don't want the headache of agents. I just want to build a healthy, long-term retirement income for my wife and I, right? That's the philosophy. So when you look at it and you say you get that person, you know, across the board from yourself with your knowledge today, if you started at scratch and you were just an agent, how would you build it? If you were starting at scratch and you were building an agency, how would you do it in today's environment?
Yeah. So first of all, when I came in, that was my philosophy too, was I'm selling to build my own income, you know. So I don't know if I was thinking about it as a book of business versus an agency, but I was certainly worried about building a personal income from sales. That's what I wanted to do. Hindsight is 2020. And so once you know what a book of business is worth versus a money machine, and a money machine is an agency or an FMO that, you know, you can remove yourself from. For some reason, can you guys still see?
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that little popover. I was like, oh, my internet went out or something. But once you realize what the money machine trades at, and then you start thinking, okay, you know, what's my real desire here? At first it's okay, feed my family. Then it's, you know, then it's make 100,000, then whatever, it's 200, it's 250, it's 300, whatever those numbers are. I would say it's a moving target for most people. Whatever their desire is, eventually if they hit it, the desire probably changes, because that's where happiness comes from, is, you know, move the goalpost, hit the goalpost, move the goalpost, right? You know, if you figure out, like, wait a minute, I can have, you know, whatever that number is, 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, $50 million for 10 years worth of work set aside, and then go back to building for fun if I want to, which I think most people that accomplish that still want to some degree, but now it's for fun, I'm not going to get stressed about it as much as I would have before. Once you know that's possible, it's very difficult to turn a blind eye to it. I remember I was building as an individual agent, and I met a lot of great people. I would go to the MedSup conference back in the day, which is now Medicarians. And I would go I would work real hard and win some carrier incentive trips. I would lean into certain carriers, call it what it is, to win carrier incentive trips, to get around people that were doing better than me. And I'd immediately find the people that I thought were the biggest in the room by production, which I have learned since then. net profit is more relevant than overall production. But still, the people that were producing a lot knew something, right? Individual and agency. And one, you know, over that time, I got around guys that one of them did sell their business back then. And this was, you know, 8 or 9 years ago. So it was in the early days of the acquisitions. And I remember, he never told me this, and I won't say his name because I don't, but I heard that it was a $50 million acquisition at the time. And I started learning more about how long he had been in the business. And it was like 12 years. And I was like, wait a minute, you know, this is crazy. So the guy was like 43 at the time. And, you know, and I was like 27 or 28, but I was sitting there thinking, okay, this, you know, if that can be done, like, how do I do that? You know? So it did start to change my thoughts. And so I would say anybody that's building a book of business, the book of business is valuable. The renewals are amazing. But then one day you might get to that level and then build the agency. So if I go back to like how I would start out, I'd still start out focused on the book of business, because in the beginning, like, it's unfair to say if I know exactly what I know now, because I know exactly what I know now, I'd go borrow money and pour it into, you know, different mediums, right? But if I knew what I knew then, but I just had the belief in like how valuable it was, so I just knew like a part of what I know now, I'd still have to start out the hard way a little bit, because you got to run through walls and build the book of business. And, you know, early on, some of the things that I did that helped tremendously were, you know, doing all the goofy stuff, like, you know, doing business reply cards and filling my day with meeting, with what I would consider now a lower quality meeting in bulk, face to face, in houses. But then simultaneously stopping by businesses everywhere I go to try to build referral relationships and laying that foundation. And that first year or two of that, hard and fast, can't be overstated, like how important it was. But, you know, knowing what I know now, 100%, like, I would go hard and fast into Facebook ads. It's just a great, it's a great equalizer. And people that tell me, like, I tried Facebook ads, it didn't work. You know, they probably tried buying Facebook leads from someone, or they tried to set up an ad or two and it didn't work. You know, that kind of stuff requires a lot of trial and error. But once you get one going, it can be like a money pit that you're just trying to pull all the money out of before somebody else finds it and gets their share of it. That's what it's about. And anybody, and we'll tell, like, I might tell somebody, like, oh, you can use T65 webinars, or you can target, you know, veterans campaigns, or you can target food cart, or whatever the hell's out there, right? You know, you can target final expense, you know, all these different things. These are concepts, but all the money's made in finding something that it can be within one of those niches, or it could be a completely separate niche, but it's about finding a way that works for you that is awesome and not telling anybody and grabbing everything you can from it. And so now when we consult on marketing, it's like, it's not that I'm being disingenuous in telling you, but it's like, you have to be a little bit creative yourself. And I'm not an artist. So when I say creative, it's not about making the coolest looking ad. It's about, who do I want to target? How do I want to target it? Where do I want to find it? So I can't endorse things like LinkedIn ads and TikTok or any of that because I haven't used them. But am I going to tell somebody it doesn't work? No. I just don't know anybody that's figured it out really well yet. I'm sure it works. And the person that figures it out will probably make, if they're smart, will make millions and billions of dollars off of it. But I will tell you this, early on, and I've said this several times, is the first honey hole I found, I didn't realize that somebody else was coming for it. And so I didn't scale it hard and fast. And so it was fruitful. But had I been more expedient in how fast I was scaling at the time, I would have made a lot more money that first, you know, that first honey hole, which was really my second year in the business. But, you know, I thought all the insurance agents are old and I'm using Facebook and none of them are. And eventually I was like, wait, there are some other young guys out there and they're using bigger budgets than me. And then it started to get more and more competitive, but it's still not that competitive. The attention on Facebook and not all of the internet is still cheaper than traditional media by a long shot. So, like, you just have to go on there. Now, it'll steal money from you real fast.
Yeah, it will.
It will, because, like, you got it. So when you can't go on there and be like, I'm going to spend $1,000 a day and just pop this ad up and then walk away from it, you know. You know, and the problem early on is most young agents don't have big budget. When I say young agents, it's not relative to their age at all. It's relative to their experience level. You have a 40-year-old, 50-year-old, 60-year-old that'll blow way more money on there really fast and get no return on it. You know, and so I would say that, you know, I would run Facebook ads, but I know how to run Facebook ads now, you know, at this level. If I didn't know that, I mean, dude, going out and beating down doors and building referral relationships and working direct mail or any kind of bulk lead will work in the meantime. You could also do click to call transfers and all that kind of stuff. There's no wrong way to get in the business in the beginning. It's all about getting profitable and putting policies on the books and knowing that every one of them is more valuable than you think it is. Because you're not dealing, it's not like retail. Like, retail's so simple. Like, I buy a pack of gum for a quarter, I sell it for a dollar, I got a 75% margin. How many of those can I sell? You know, with renewal-based insurance policies, nobody's looking at the lifetime value. So if you can look at return on ad spend as profitable in the first 12 months at all, then you should spend as much as possible on that, because year two and three and four is all 100% free money. So anyway, and then most of the guys you're competing against will spend 18 to 24 months of their, you know, these big call centers, that's what they've been doing until they've plummeted their LTV by scaling too fast.
It's funny you mentioned Facebook. I've, in my mind, with us using social media and doing some of the marketing through Facebook, I kind of look at it like barbecue. It's probably a horrible analogy, but you can't necessarily set it and forget it.
but you can go buy a great big Wagyu brisket and completely ruin the thing, throw money down the drain, but it's a learning lesson. What did I do wrong? I need to come back. I need to maybe check it out. Maybe I didn't leave enough fat on it. Maybe I skinned it down a little too much. Maybe I put the wrong seasoning. But to your point, you have to be willing to invest the money to find out what works for you and your company, because you can get an ad that pulls great, but the quality of the recruit or the quality of the lead that you're looking for is just, it's not a good fit for your business. So that performed great. Your CPA may be low, but it's, you got a bunch of nothing that's not going to help you grow your business, and it works in reverse as well. So I loved hearing that part from you, because I always try and equate it over to barbecue, and I'm like, dude, you better figure out what your recipe is and what you're looking for on your ad.
I just haven't figured out the barbecue part of it yet, because every time I try to grill, my wife is the cook for sure. But at the beginning of this year, I was on a meat kick. I was watching Paul Saladino, and I've lost 27 pounds. I've been trying to like eat a bunch of meat, you know. And I started, so I was like, Tyler Reese sent me a thing of Wagyu steaks for Christmas, and then like several other people sent me all these Omaha steaks. So I got this deep freezer full of steaks, and I was like, I'm gonna start grilling every day. And I was just butchering these steaks. I'd still eat them, so, but I was like killing them. Nobody else in the house would eat them. So
it's trial and error. You're figuring out how to
need more trial and error. I needed to stick to it longer. I was tired of, after about 4 or 5 days into the new year, I was tired of eating burnt steak. So that's what happens to people with Facebook, is they get tired of eating, you know, burnt leads, and they think, oh, I'm just going to quit, and they're 3 feet from gold. And one of the biggest things, though, you know, when I first got online and was talking to agents, people were posting back then screenshots of their lead cost, and their lead cost would be like 50 cents and $1.50 and so I think this perception became like, oh, you got to get all these cheap leads, $1, $1.50, $2, $3. And so one of the things I've written before was, you know, the your belief that you should have a cheap lead is costing you tens of thousands, if not 100,000, if not millions of dollars, depending on the scale at which you attack it. But the because I've had leads that were $50, $60, $70 that closed at 40, 50%. Who cares? Like, that's still good, right? So like it's all the cost, you know, it's all about the acquisition cost, CAC, CPA, whatever you call it. That's just unfortunately so many people are looking at that lead cost, and they'll throw a Facebook ad up and it'll get a $20 lead, and like they'll spend $60 and turn it off because it's not, the leads aren't cheap enough. We don't even know if those leads might be cheap enough. It depends on the messaging. If the messaging is high quality, it's educational. If I'm running T65 webinar ads and I'm getting $20 signups for the webinar, that might be really good. You know, if I'm getting, if I'm running Part B give back generic ads on an incognito Facebook page and I'm getting $20 leads, it's probably not going to be that good, right? I probably need to get that down to sub 10. But it's all about what's my closing ratio going to be and all that. So, you know, that gets, it's so in, it seems so in the weeds, but it really is everything when you start to scale, especially when you get yourself off the phone, you know, or yourself out of the sale. But even when it's you, if you can build it around you at a high quantity with a good CPA, then you use yourself as the testing point. And the next time you hire an internal agent, if they're not getting the same result with the exact same lead flow, then it's probably a sales issue. It's probably a contact rate issue or something. So versus a, you know, oh, it's the leads. Well, I'm working the leads. They're working for me. So now I need to get you trained where you can work them this way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny too, because there are some people who kind of create paralysis by analysis. They won't even try to get out into that in the testing demo to get going, because the ad doesn't look perfect or the wording isn't exactly what it should be to perform. And there's a lot of people that don't even get into it, which, you know, there's educational items out even just on the internet. Like, you can go search for how to become better. It's insane that a lot of people don't even jump in yet.
I mean, if you need sales, and this is not even a full endorsement of any of these people, but like Instagram has plenty of sales gurus, and all of them are right and all of them are wrong in some ways, but you're better off. I mean, you can go in there and get tons and tons of free ones. I'll throw up some things on there sometimes. We'll blow up things of one of our sales manager, Jackson Taylor, on there. I mean, we're doing sales training for 21 guys in here every morning that are selling at a much higher percentage than probably most of the majority of the industry. And then we just throw those clips up for free, you know, all the time. We'll put long form ones on YouTube. And then, you know, I mean, we have this little sales mini course that Jackson and I just recorded that we're going to sell soon for, I think we're doing it for $4.95 or $27, something super cheap. And I'm like, it's just an obvious win. Like, it's so cheap. And it's like the six most core sales that we do and exactly how we attack them. We write them out on the vibe board. And, you know, and so that stuff's out there, like sales. And then when you get into marketing, I mean, even on YouTube University, there's a ton of here's how to set up Facebook ads. If you want to get more, you know, like, okay, here's someone setting one up for insurance, there are people out there that are teaching it, you know. And a lot of times, if you know somebody that's having success with it and you just ask them, I've found that, you know, I think back in the day, this was not a very generous industry, but I find now that there's plenty of people that will spend way too much time teaching someone that they're not even invested in free stuff. And I'd done it too. And you know, part of that was to, you said that early on, like part of that, you know, I believe in the old like giver's gain concept. I bought into it reading Gary Vaynerchuk early on, that if you just go out there and teach people, you know, a certain percentage of them are going to flock to you. And I don't need everybody, you know, but if I have it where a lot of people like our content, even if they like their current upline or their current home, like I don't need everyone to move to me. Some people don't realize that a viewer of my content holds value, whether they ever do anything else, because they fuel the algorithm. And then you can say the same thing for consumers. If I'm going out and putting consumer-driven content, you go out, there's some guys on YouTube. I won't name their names, but there's some consumer-focused YouTube accounts that have videos getting 200, 300, 400,000 views. It's not like every one of those people bought from them. Some of them probably went to a local agent. Some of them probably had already bought and they were like confirming, yes, that's what my good agent told me. Some of them probably watched it and said, what the hell does this guy know? He's just trying to sell me something. But all of those viewers fueled the algorithm to get in front of the people that would buy from those people, right? So that there's value in every aspect of it. So, you know, when some people say, oh, you got 1,000 views on that YouTube video. Yeah, but how many of them bought something from maybe 10, but would I have gotten those 10 if I didn't get the other 999 or 990 viewers? You know, probably. So,
yeah, I mean, I love that. So if I was to go back to that original question, I want to give you a quote here at the end of this and see your thought process on it. I think it's aligned with what Chase and I do with our current business model, which is an ever-changing business model, just so everyone knows. And that's pretty clear to you based on what you said, is it's in this industry in and of itself, as a business owner, regardless of what industry you're in, what you mentioned is the same thing. It's funny. Our thoughts are aligned on a lot of things. Never even, you know, talked to each other before. But I always say the same analogy to Chase, and I say it to all agents, you know, disruption, of course, equals opportunity. It was great to be a stockbroker in the 90s. It was great to be a mortgage broker before the recession, a real estate agent before the recession. It was great to be an under 65 agent selling before ACA came out, you know, those short-term medical plans. And now there's a different dynamic to the business. So intelligent business owners do what? They pivot, but they pivot quickly to make adaptations so that way they can ensure they're in business, whether they stay in that industry or they adapt to the next highest paying commission industry and build a successful, sustainable business model there. Because of course, being a stockbroker today is nothing like it is, like it was in the 90s. And when you lower commissions, and you drive up regulation, you scare away the talent that goes into the next industry to say, hey, where can I still get paid? I'm a highly skilled salesperson. As long as I can sell, I'll always have a job. Where can I go that I would make a lot of money? Because I always do the right thing. I don't need a regulator to tell me to do the right thing. I know doing the right thing works out well. So just to give a recap to everyone that's listening in on this, you know, how would you build a book business? How would you build an agency? And the answer is phenomenal and aligned with a lot of the people. And the way that he started it off was, I would go and try and do a lot of production, right? So this is what I would do. And then it answers the question of how I would get there. So I would do a lot of production to get on a carrier incentive trip, to build relationships with, here's the key thing, those who are where you want to be, which is the cheat code for the business. Any entrepreneurship, any book that you read on your desk is a cheat code to acquiring knowledge without having to put in the decade, or in the analogy you gave is, or, you know, from that guy that sold his business for $50 million, being in the business for 12 years, which, just so you know, people, incredibly short period of time to be in a business in general, and then to have a very large exit like that, it's a cheat code. So establishing those relationships is an amazing thing. And then we said, Justin had said, borrowing money and capital. If you have a deal, right? If you go in, like he was just talking about, just to use real estate again for an example, and you see that this house could sell for $500,000, but you have an opportunity to buy it for $200,000, okay? And you got to put $100,000 into it. There's $200,000 of profit there. Whenever you have a deal, money will always be there for you to capitalize on a deal. And when you find a sound business model, raising the capital or borrowing the money, which is what he said, borrowing the money, whatever form you might have to do that, makes sense. Because if you can put a dollar into an ATM and today it'll give you $2, that's still good because you're doubling your money. But every policy is worth more. It's more valuable in the future than you think it is today. So that same ATM next year is going to give you that $2 again. And then again, it's going to give you that $2. And you only put the dollar in once. And it keeps giving you that dollar, those $2 on it. So it's a learning process for every single agent as they go through it. But the initial ramp up of any business needs to be, as he said, hard and fast, regardless of which way, which avenue you decide to acquire your leads, because the cost per lead does not matter, whether it's the Facebook ads, the BRCs, the business reply cards, whether it's the in-house, you know, sitting and doing those face-to-face sales, or you're going business to business of, hey, you have retirees, let me help those retirees. I know you don't want the retirees that are on the books on those employer plans because it costs you more money as they get older and unhealthier. Let me put them into the Medicare space, right? What about those T65 webinars, the vet campaigns, final expense, a completely different vertical within the same insurance industry? You're selling a different product that overlaps the same exact person. It's a cross sell. So having that stuff with trial and error, but hitting it in the first year or 2 years hard and fast, so you don't have to learn the issue that he had, which was someone else was coming for it. So he had a great business model, was working great. And then what you realize, oh, all insurance or agents are older guys. We think things that may not always be true, but you don't learn it until it is. So someone else is always in life coming for what you want. Someone else is always coming for what you have, and they're willing to take it, and they're your competition. So that first year or two of establishing those relationships, building it, finding that mentor, which is the key thing, right? That's so crucial to have a cheat code to a successful and sustainable business model, and finding the capital any which way to do it when you have that successful business model is going to help you be successful long-term here. And that's what this entire call has been about. And it's been about that, which is just absolutely amazing. So when we look at it, cost per lead, guys, I don't care. Justin doesn't care. Chase doesn't care if he spends $100 because he's going to make $800. I don't care what the cost of the lead is. I care about the quality of the lead, right? He said generic, lower cost, right? More volume, lower quality. High intent, higher cost. I'm going to get a healthy return on investment, right? Because it's a higher intent, better quality lead, which generally speaking can lead to a higher persistency, right? Which is the potential clients to stay on the books.
Well, so a cost, there is a cost associated with, let's say you have a sales team or a block of agents or whoever you're feeding or yourself, where there's a cost to my time associated or the time of my people. And so if they're having to work through a lot of low quality leads, you know, when I could fill them with higher quality leads. And I'm not saying that that's always like, we have a mixture. So we'll go for What's the highest quality, low quality, easy to tap lead flow? The highest quality, low quality, easy to tap lead flow that's fueling everything while I'm spending as much money as I can developing the highest quality lead or prospect. That's when I'm like, I feel like it's already a prospect by the time I talk to it. Now it might be webinars and seminars and, depending on the thing, like overtime, long-term traditional media branding, television, high quality T65 direct mail pieces or series. We mail books out. We mail books and letter series like hand stamp, anything like that. I'm trying to create as much of that high quality, but at the same time, I do have them in that, you know, that mid quality space, you know, where I'm trying to like, okay, I got to keep them busy and sharp, but if that high quality goes up and I don't have enough salespeople, I'll reduce the budget on the low quality stuff because I don't need it. You know, I only need it to scale, you know? So there's a time, if my guy's sitting there all day and they're closing one app, what was the cost to me to just keep them sitting there all day to close one when I could have had them higher quality lead flow? I might have spent more on the lead flow, but they might have closed three that day. And I get a better return that way. And like you said, the persistency makes the LTV go up. Also, higher quality lead flow has a higher potential for cross sale, whether it's final expense and annuities or, you know, even back to the ancillary health market like cancer, hospital indemnity, and DVH. Those are very profitable products. It's funny how many people have like slept on DVH, hip, and cancer, and it adds up big time.
I want to ask you a question on that because you can go into it. Well, rather, I'll give you a quote and you run with it. So there's this quote that we hear all the time by what I would consider poor mentors in the industry who listen to a snippet of a hour-long podcast, and you listen to that one snippet and it's way out of context, right? Yeah. So people take this one quote, which is a jack of all trades is a master of none, but they oftentimes don't read the whole quote because there's actually a second line in there that says, but oftentimes superior to a master of one. Okay. And you can give the analogy of martial arts, right? MMA, mixed martial arts. If someone knows just jiu-jitsu, do you think the guy that knows jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, judo is going to dominate them in a fight? 1,000%. But hey, you guys gave me a lot of information. Where do I start? Jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes superior to a master of one. You were just going down that road. DVH, cancer, heart attack, stroke, final expense, other product lines. Tell me about how that quote right there makes you feel and what an agent should do.
Right. So I think it's, there's a truth to it in the beginning, you know, like a riches and niches type of focus, you know, but like for me, okay. And I don't want to take that too far out of context either, because a rich and niche might be Medicare. Well, and then at some point it might become health, and then that niche might widen to health and life, you know, because a niche doesn't have to be super granularly niche, but it can start that way. So like when we start an agent internally now, we actually tell them not to cross sell in the beginning, but that's because we're just trying to hone that first skill of close the core application. We'll put them on age leads. We'll give them a task closing a set number, call it 20 core Medicare Advantage or Medicare supplement plans off of that, that core block, right? Or that core group of leads. And then when they get there, then we start working on, okay, now we're going to put you on some fresh leads. Still, we're okay with you closing core, but once you get to another 10 core on there, now we're going to authorize you. We actually won't even give them permission to cross sell until they hit like a certain amount. And then we start working on the cross sell. But I don't like these people that use a quote like that to never cross sell. It's silly, because once you get really good at selling Medicare Advantage, Medicare supplement, it should become at some point just like super instinctive, like when you can insert that additional sale. And you know, some people are very good at that, like reading the situation and knowing like, okay, on this one, I'm not going to bring up hospital indemnity, cancer, or dental. And then other ones will say, on this one, I'm not going to bring up hospital indemnity because they don't qualify for a GI period. They won't pass the underwriting, but they would pass for a cancer policy. So I'm going to go that route and I'm going to bring it up. Or this person, right? Like, we have processes for it, and our processes, honestly, internally is DVH. You know, we don't really bring up at all with Medicare Advantage for obvious reasons. With Medicare supplements, we do. So, like, we'll get a T65 Medicare supplement deal, but we'll bring that up as a, do you want fries with that? Did you want dental and vision with that? And a lot of them will just say, yes, okay, here's the one we recommend. It costs this much. Good, good. That's pretty much it. Like that sale is so easy. And if they say no to it, it's not that big of a deal. I don't need to talk them into that. One I'll talk them into is cancer. If it's a Medicare Advantage plan, of course, we're going hospital indemnity with cancer. But of course, there's some of them that give me the signs right out of the gate that it might be more of a waste of my time to bring it up. Unfortunately, I think some people will look for any sign to not bring up the cross sale. And if they just brought it up 100% of the time, more of them would close it than when they tried to decipher it all the time, right? It's just, there's a skill level that you get to where I could like, and I might be a little out of practice on it because obviously I don't sell mail, but at the pinnacle of me selling, I felt like I could sit in front of 99% of prospects and just after talking to them, like I'd be able to predict pretty early in the appointment exactly what I was going to be able to sell them, you know, with pretty high accuracy. You know, not 100%, you know, because that's like being God, but you could get to the point where you know what their budget is, you know what their temperament is, you know where, you know, what their desires are, or a lot of their objections, or like how hot of a prospect are they, how easy is it going to be able to close this? You know, and you would know. And that I've had appointments where I've walked out of there, and this isn't like a common thing, but I've had appointments where I walked out with 10 applications. You know, back in the day, I don't want to get into the final expense in Medicare cross sale, but this was MedSup, PDP, cancer policy, DVH, and final expense on a husband and wife. You know, now that was awesome. You know, you're not going to get that all the time, but we actually pretty frequently do get 3, 4, 5, 6 applications in an appointment, you know, with a husband and wife, or 2 and 3 with a single person, even 4 and 5 sometimes, but most of the time I would say we are averaging like a 2.5 applications per person with the cross sale. And that money becomes, it could pay my whole marketing budget, you know? So like, how much more can I say when somebody says, well, it's just another $250 or it's just another $300. Okay. What was your cost per acquisition? You know, the cost of that as well. Well, yeah, I mean, that might be more than my cost per acquisition for the client. Like, so then if I'm neutralizing my entire cost per acquisition or 70% of it or 60% of it, that's 40% more I can spend on marketing or operations. So it, you know, people that are looking at it like that, normally my objections in cross-selling come from individual agents too. They don't come from agency owners. Agency owners are all looking for more money to scale faster. So they look at it and like, okay, well, if I have 10 agents and they all cross sell and I get this much additional revenue from that, then I can go and hire 2 more people, or I can go, and they're looking at it more from that cost. Whereas an individual agent, I think, just looks at it as a burden, but I think it's an excuse because they don't want to have to learn it because they think that there's going to be a leather long conversation. But normally once, Grant Cardone says, you know, and if you hate Grant Cardone, that's fine, but he does say some good stuff. And one of them is second money is easier to get than first money. And even if you're selling a zero premium product, it's more about trust. I got someone to buy some to trust me with this process. Once they trust me with this process, the next thing that I offer them, they're more susceptible to buy that. It'd be an easier sale technically than the first.
Yeah, and to drive that point home, because you articulated beautifully, like, find your foundation first, you know, because there is a lot of people who have fell out of the industry because they tried to do 37 different things at once. And with you saying, like, we don't allow our guys to do it until this point here, like, get your feet underneath you. Become a staff
leader. The person that's called me before and said, well, like, I figured it out, guys. Holden Chase, I got the business model. Here it is. Okay, I'm not going to just do Medicare. We're not going to just do light. I actually got my real estate license, my life license, my PNC. That's funny. And you know how how Plan F works? No. You know how a PPO works? No. I'm like, so like, you know, I do believe you can definitely do too much, but in the beginning, it's find a single, somebody said it, single purpose, single focus of purpose or something like that is a, it initially is like, I got to be driven to do this one thing really, really well. And then once that becomes like driving, you know, when you're driving and sometimes you're like, wow, I don't even remember the last 10 minutes of driving, you know, that's because you're really good at it, you know, now. Like, and it's not because you were zoned out and weren't paying attention. You were paying attention, but you've gotten so good at paying attention to driving while thinking about a million different other things that you can do it. Well, eventually you can get so good at selling a Medicare Advantage plan or a Medicare supplement rewrite or a T65 Medicare that, of course, cross-selling should be a next thing. And then eventually, guess what? You'll get so good at cross-selling, you can do it without. So it's not like, and the reason I do a lot of health cross-sales is this isn't a different thing for them. It's like health, like Medicare supplement, Medicare Advantage, Part D prescription drug plans, cancer policies, hospital indemnity policies, and standalone DVH, to me, are all part of the same conversation.
Yeah.
There's an argument to be made that then I can throw final expense in there, and then I can throw retirement too, but like that might be one tiny step removed. Final expense can be on the fence, right? And of course, you have a compliance deal. So but if you keep it health related, and actually, it's funny, this has been this way for a while, but I had somebody the other day, so I thought you couldn't talk about hospital indemnity and all that and Medicare Advantage. I was like, no, the damn scope of appointments all now say. There's a little time where you couldn't. There was a small period of time where it was like, but then they added other health products, you know, and that other health products is every other health product. So while you're in there, if you're worried about compliance, cancer cross sales now, they're not as profitable or commission-wise as final expense, but they've gotten pretty damn good, you know. And the sell is easy. Some people will say, why do they need a cancer policy? Well, I mean, with Medicare Advantage, it's obvious. Like if they get diagnosed with cancer and they have chemotherapy and they have a, you know, $5,000 maximum out of pocket, this would pay that maximum out of pocket for all those cancer-related activities, right? Because they're getting a lump sum benefit for that, right? The other one, and we technically want the benefit to be double what their maximum out of pocket is, because they might get it in December, have a December's worth of chemo, and then in January, they got January's worth of chemo. So if it's a $7,000 max out of pocket, then I might want to have a $14,000 or $15,000 lump sum benefit, which is a good reason to get get the premium bigger because it makes sense. But then on the traditional Medicare with a sup concept is you have unforeseen out of pocket for drugs. Now that they're going to put a $2,000 maximum out of pocket on drugs, which is going to cause more disruption, which is opportunity. You're going to have, you still have $2,000 out of pocket, which if you get on Revlimid for cancer, you're going to, even in the formulary, you're going to have that out of pocket. Plus some of those drug plans are probably going to kick some of these big cancer drugs out of the formulary, which might even make the case for a bigger cancer policy. But then you have non-medical expenses like driving to MD Anderson and staying in hotels and all that. How many of your customers can afford $10,000 a year worth of travel expenses related to cancer treatment, right? Now, they probably have family and friends that'll do all that, but the same reason you sell final expense and annuities for legacy purposes, they also don't want them to help them with medical bills. You know, they would, most people in retirement want to be able to stand on their own two feet as much as possible. So cancer policies sell really well. They're very sticky. The people that want them. We have 88% 13-month persistency on our cancer cross sale, whereas, I mean, that's pretty damn good. And that's across our distribution.
That's better than damn good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's exceptional. Find your fastball. I always go back to a sports analogy. It seems like find your fastball first, then pivot, work in the curveball, work in the changeup, the slider. We've kept you way past our original a lot of time. So we're super appreciative of the time today. But any parting shot you want to throw out there to anybody that's listening in today, Justin?
Yeah. I mean, everybody is. There's all kinds of, I've seen people that are probably under worried about the market and some people are over worried. I would just say stay in the middle, be concerned to the point of educating yourself on how you can do a better job for consumers. And knowing that there's very likely a very, very bright, potentially even more bright future in the Medicare and health insurance world. But the good news is your life and health license, annuities, life insurance, Medicare, under 65 health, ancillary health products. You're a Swiss Army knife. You have plenty and plenty of opportunity. There's plenty of people before us that made a shitload of money just selling cancer policies. Plenty of people that just call up people that have Medicare Advantage plans that weren't explained to them and sell them that. There's even money that I believe is coming in the benefit activation world, or the HRA might not be being paid by the carriers anymore in the future. Doesn't mean Sunfire won't pay for the data. There's so many different opportunities that are on the horizon that people should just stay plugged in, learn as much as possible, and then think about continuing to grow.
Awesome. Appreciate you jumping on with us today, man, and letting us get some time with you. Always insightful.
I'll just throw out there Medicare Con. You guys have already thrown out some additional information about the announcement regarding Medicare Con. Where is it going to be this year? When are the dates?
Yeah, so it's I might butcher the dates, but I'm pretty sure it's April 14th to 16th. It is, you know, April 2025, so got plenty of time right now. But it is in Orlando this year. We always get heat about where it's at from one side or the other. But we felt like 2 years in Vegas, you got to bring it back to the East Coast. We know there's a lot of agents in Florida, a lot in Orlando, Miami, Tampa, that area. So we believe we'll get a lot of attendance from those guys. Obviously, made it very convenient. But it's in Orlando at a Disney property. It's a Hilton Signia. So it is a Disney partner. We had it in Sin City 2 years in a row. I heard all the stories about wives. Like, why do you get a business trip in Vegas? Like it was the hangover or something. Well, now you can take your wife and your kids. They can go hang out at Disney and Epcot and all that stuff and Universal while you're alerted about Medicare. And next year, the plan is to we're going back to having a lot of speakers, very contextual. I have some great plans for Medicare Con and always looking for more sponsors. So anybody that's out there that's looking for sponsor opportunities, we're looking for, InsurTech startups. It's funny, two of the sponsors this year that were there are InsurTech startups that came up with their idea at Medicare Con a couple years prior. And they're making money on tech now. So a lot of ways to make money, but we love tech. We love solutions that agents could buy into that we would use. We want our sponsors to be people that we could endorse our attendees partnering with in one way or another.
That's awesome. Well, we look forward to seeing you there. Triple H, appreciate you jumping on as well, buddy, as always.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you. Justin, pleasure to meet you. Thank you for your time. Thanks, Jess.
Awesome. Thanks, Justin. We'll see if we can circle up and do this again. We'll give it a little bit of a break so we don't bug you, but appreciate the time, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the EFES podcast. For more, visit EFESnation.com and subscribe to the podcast catalog on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.